And the Trump administration is announcing new sanctions today against North Korea. It's part of the ongoing effort to deprive the country of the money it needs for its nuclear missile program. And it comes after yesterday's decision to redesignate North Korea as a state sponsor of terrorism. So North Korea will now join Iran, Sudan, and Syria on that list. Jim Walsh is here now, security analyst, and he is MIT's security study. He's with MIT Security Studies program. Jim, good to see you.
Good to see you.
Putting North Korea back on this list comes along with some new sanctions that will impose what the administration is calling maximum pressure. Does it carry any heft, or is it just symbolism?
I think there might have been a time when the North Koreans cared about this. They cared enough about it that they wanted it removed. So that tells you a little bit, but a lot of water has flown under, come under the bridge since then. We've had sanctions and sanctions and sanctions and sanctions.
Right.
I'm not really sure one more sanction on something that is really quite an old law is going to matter very much.
What sanctions are left?
Well, the Congress could pass new sanctions over human rights or over some other issue, but basically there's no interaction between North Korea and the United States. And if anything, one has to be – I've written with my colleague John Park at Harvard on this. One has to be careful about unintended consequences. If you squeeze and squeeze and squeeze without thinking about what you're doing, the people who are really going to pay that price, it's not going to be the generals. It's not going to be the Kim family.
The North Korean people.
It's going to be the vulnerable women and children who are, face food insecurity.
Well, let's put this into some historical context. North Korea had been deemed a sponsor of terrorism back in 1988. You mentioned this. You referred to that.
Yep.
That was after a South Korean passenger jet was bombed by North Korean agents. 115 people on the plane died. But the designation was then removed in 2008. It was part of an effort to get an agreement under the Bush administration to bring them to the negotiating table on the nuclear deal. That didn't work. Was it the right strategy at the time?
Well, did it work? Well, we started down a path that was going to restrain North Korea's weapons programs, and then that agreement fell apart for various reasons. The thing is, I would say about this is that we're in a period of lull right now. We haven't had a lot of missile tests and nuclear tests. This is the chance for the U.S. and North Korea really to advance the engagement piece. Now, their policy is called maximum pressure and engagement, and we'll see whether this sort of roils the waters, because we normally in a given year we don't have that many opportunities because we're always either sanctioning or they're testing or there are military exercises.
Right.
So they're few and far between.
Well, the South Korean defense minister said today that the South Korean military is maintaining a firm readiness posture. So South Korea is wondering what's going to happen now.
Absolutely. And all along, you saw President Moon's comments before that there can be no war launched without consideration of South Koreans' wishes. They're the ones – South Korea is the place where a war will be fought. Naturally, they're a little touchy about it. So and I think most analysts are expecting a new wave of missile tests come – end of December, beginning of next year, and that creates all sorts of opportunities for mischief, intended and unintended. So, of course, the South Koreans are going to remain on guard.
But that would end the quiet period that you're mentioning.
If
these tests come back, that would end the quiet period. And a lot of analysts are saying, look, the Trump administration, by putting this new designation in place, is basically negating the chance of bringing them to the negotiating table and prompting them probably to finish off this this quiet period, right? And to bring them back.
Yeah, I don't know. And we don't know what the ultimate conclusion would be, what the counterfactual history says. But it is true. I mean, probably in general, it doesn't matter, one way or another, for good or for ill. But there is a chance that if we run into a problem down the road, we will look back in history and say, geez, we had a chance to sort of freeze this, try to bring some stability to it, and we didn't.
Yeah.
And that the timing of this was bad. The only other thing I would say, and I'm to be prickly about it, is I just don't think it's true. I mean, they don't support al-Shabaab. They don't support al-Qaeda. They're,
right.
So we're sort of forcing one law and reinterpreting it to impose it when it really doesn't apply. And I worry about laws that are just sort of applied without rationale.
Jim Walsh is here now, security analyst. He's with MIT's Security Studies program. Jim, thank you.
Thank you.